Okay, we're beginning here on the last line of Lamed Amud Bet. The Gemara is continuing the discussion from yesterday with the statement of Amar Rav ben Bar Chinina, Amar Ula, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Halacha ke Rabbi Shimon Shizuri, Lo od ela kol makom sheshana Rabbi Shimon Shizuri, Halacha ke moto. The Halacha is always like Rabbi Shimon Shizuri. We brought numerous Tanaic statements of Rabbi Shimon Shizuri where we see that the Halacha is like him because there's other Amoraim making that statement. And in each of those cases, we have the other Amoraim making that statement. We don't find that statement of Ula Amar Rabbi Chanina. And therefore, the Gemara is looking for Tanaic positions of Rabbi Shimon Shizuri whereby there are no Amoraim making comment on it, to which that statement made by Ula Amar Rabbi Chanina would be applicable. The Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Shizuri. In all instances, the Halacha is like him. So Rav Papa has a suggestion, Amar Rav Papa, a shida. It's going on a shida, which we'll discuss in 1 second in the Gemara. Rav Nachman bar Yisrael Gemara, a yayin. It's going on wine. Rav Papa Amar a shida. It's going on a shida based on a Mishnah in Kelim. Rashi, Gemara in Shabbat, says that a shida is a mekevet nashim. It's a woman's carriage. Tosafot disagrees and says that that can't be possible because if it was made for people to sit in, tamei tumat midras, and therefore wouldn't have the requirements that we're about to see in the Mishnah. Therefore, the Tosafot suggests it's a box storage area of some sort, an armoire, but not a merkevet nashim, though he does come to the defense of Rashi and suggest that some of these items are made specifically for moving produce, merchandise, or even carriage might have its primary purpose not being for sitting in, but rather for moving people back and forth and not to rest inside of it. Therefore, they wouldn't be subject to Tumat Midras. The reason Tosafot doesn't want it to be Tumat Midras is because the upcoming Mishnah says the Tnan, a Shida. When it comes to a Shida, which is a large object, we have a position with regards to large objects that if they are able to be moved when they are full and empty, then they are considered to be movable kelim that are subject to tumah. That's based on the fact that the pasuk says a number of items that are tameh, including the sack. And a sack is something that can be carried full or empty. So the size of the item will matter with regards to whether it be mekabel tumah. Threshold is 40 sa'ah, 40 sa'ah, that's with liquids, which is kuraim, 2 kor worth of yavesh volume. And in that volume, it can still be carried, then it's considered to be a kli that would be mekabel tumah. Otherwise, it's considered to be too heavy, immovable, and therefore would not be subject to tumah. So the Mishnah says there, this shida, bechamayomim nimdedet mi bifnim. You look at the internal volume in order to measure whether it can be filled up to 40 sa'ah or kuraim bi yavesh. And you don't look at the outer boundaries of the furniture. Beit Hillel omrim mibachutz. You count the walls themselves too in the volumetric calculation, not just the internal airspace that allows for the volume to be placed in. Umodim elu ve'elu. They both agree. Shein ovei haraglaim v'ovei ha'lvazvizim nimdad. So they both agree that you don't count the space which the legs of this box, armoire, storage area. You do not count those towards the volumetric minimum that it needs in order not to be mekabel tumah. Neither will you count the lips that are on top as part of the sizing of this item. Rabbi Yossi Omer Modim Shovei Hareglaim Vovei Levizulim Nidad. Everybody agrees that the thickness of the feet of this item as well as the lips are counted. Ubeneihem Enu Nimdad. But between the legs, we would not count that area. Biosi's statement is a little bit difficult because Beit Shammai already said that they only count the internal space. So obviously they're not going to count the legs and the lip on the outside. So either Rabbi Yossi disagrees fundamentally with the Tanna Kamma and thinks that there is no machloka Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel with regards to this matter, and that even Beit Shammai agrees that it's on the outer side. Or Rabbi Yossi is making his comment with regards to Beit Hillel's position. And on that, Rabbi Shimon Shizuri says, Omer, imayu raglaim gvoh tefach, if the legs lift the object more than a tefach off the ground, en b'neihem nimdad, then the space between them is significant in and of itself, like by the dinim of ohel, which are a minimum of a tefach cubed. So a space of a tefach underneath will make it significant enough that we don't count the space in between the legs, only the legs themselves. B'im lav, if it's less than that, then it's not a significant space within itself, and we will count the space between the legs also towards the minimum volume threshold we need to reach in order to make it that it's not a carryable object, and therefore would not be subject to tumah. So now, on that same Rav Shimon Shizuri in the Mishnah, Rav Papa says that's where that statement of Ula Amar Rav Chinina said that the halacha is Rav Shimon b'chol makom. Now we have the other option, which was Rav Nachman Yitzchok said, a yayin, a Mishnah that deals with yayin. The Tanan, we have a Mishnah, Rabbi Meir Omer, Shemen Tchila Leolam. Shemen is always a Rishon Netuma. This is based on the Gemara in the beginning of Shabbat, which talks about Tumat Mashkim, tumah that comes to liquids. Liquids that are mekabel tuma, even if they're mekabel tuma from an ava tuma, which normally would drop down one level to a rishon the tuma, which is what tchila means, rishon the tuma, or if it was touched by a rishon the tuma, which would normally make it a sheni the tuma, or if it's touched by a sheni the tuma, which normally make it a shlishi the tuma in truma, any one of those tuma items that touch shemen will make it into a rishon the tuma. The reason for that gezerah is based on the fact that a sheretz is an avatuma, and a sheretz avatuma comes into contact with liquids, we make them into a rishon the tuma. And since liquids are very apt to getting tuma, because they don't require heksher, the kabel tuma, they don't require priming to be kabel tuma, therefore, the Chachamim instituted a gezerah that shemen, that is mekabel tuma, from any level that will be posel tuma, which means all the way down to a sheni the tuma, would automatically be a rishon the tuma, similar to the case of a sheretz that comes into contact with liquid, which is a very common situation. Chachamim omrim af advash. Chachamim say not only does shemen have that rule, so does davash, so does honey. Rabbi Shimon Shazuri omer af hayayin. Even yibuayin has that din, which implies that Rabbi Shimon Shazuri is saying shemen, davash, and yayin, and also implies that the Tanakama believes that yayin is not included. Echlal, the Tanakama sever yayin lo. That means the Tanakama thinks that yayin is not. That's strange. Nobody would think that shemen is more of a liquid than yayin, and therefore, why would he pick shemen over yayin? Shimon Shazuri is saying afa yayin. He's saying that all these other items and yayin on top of that. So, ema, it should read, Rabbi Shimon Shazuri omer yayin. He says yayin alone is considered to be a liquid, but the other items mentioned by the Chachamim and the Tanakama, which are shemen and dvash, they are not included in this rule, or this gezerah. Now, Tosafot over here points out that this is very strange, because all over Shas, we know that these items are considered to be liquids. We have a principle that there are seven liquids. Yad, Shachat, Dam is the acronym to know what they are. Yayin, Dam, Shemen, Chalav, Tal, Dvash, and Mayim are all considered to be liquids in the world of Tumah, and they are Machshir, the Kabel Tumah, and they're also Mekabel Tumah, according to those that think that liquids can be Mekabel Tumah. So why would you all of a sudden have here Tanaim that are limiting this din to specific liquids when we know throughout Shas that all seven of these liquids are considered or classified to be in the same category and considered to be Mashkim? For that reason, the Balei Tosfot over here bring from the Rabbeinu Tam the Hachi might be Karush. That we're talking about here are not liquids that are not in their liquid form, but rather they've coagulated. And therefore, the chiddush here is that coagulated shemen still has a din like shemen that is liquid. And coagulated davash has the same din as davash that is liquid. And Rav Shimon Shazuri says only wine has that din, which is coagulated wine will be considered like a liquid. But in that way, the Rabbeinu Tam differentiates this from the other positions in Shas, and therefore here it's speaking about a very specific case of coagulation, and that's why it limits it to these liquids, whereas when you're talking about pure liquids, all seven, including these three here, would be under the rubric of this gezerah. So now we have two instances where Rav Shimon Shazuri appears in the Mishnah, and we say, based on Ula's statement, that the locha would be like Rav Shimon Shazuri, and there are no other Amoraim making statements about the fact that the locha is like Rav Shimon Shazuri in those instances. Now the Gemara tests this and says, also have a braita. Not only do we have two Mishnayot with Rav Shimon Shazuri, where we have no comments from the Amoraim, we also have a braita that has Rav Shimon Shazuri's position, and the Gemara later on will query as to whether this principle applies only to Mishnayot or to braitot as well. So Tanya, Amar Rav Shimon Shazuri, Pamachat Nitariv Li, Tevel Bechulin. I had this instance where I had untithed produce that fell into tithed produce, which means that it's already Chulin Gemurim. Now, what exactly is the status of this Tevel is not clear. Rashi at first says that the Tevel is Tevel of Demai, which means it's Tevel from an Amma Aretz, where there's a Safek as to whether they took off the Masrot or not. Rashi later on comes back and says he doesn't think that's right for questions that he has on this. Therefore, he says that it's Tevel Vadai. It's Tevel that was completely Tevel. The tithes had to be separated Midoraita Min HaTorah, and it's regular Vadai Tevel. Now, in addition, the Gemara is going to continue to discuss this based on the discussion of the Gemara, which I'll point out later. It seems to be here that the Truma was already taken off, and it was Tevel for other untithed items, but not the Truma, because otherwise you'll run into a problem later on. So now, Vati Vishalti at Rabbi Tarfon. And I went and asked Rabbi Tarfon what to do about this. Now, it's a little strange that he's asking Rabbi Tarfon what to do about this, because we had on the previous Amud the case of Rav Shimon Shazuri with the Pula Mitzri. And Rav Shimon Shazuri said, you mix it up nice and well, and once you mix it up, when you mafrish, you'll take a statistical sample of whatever is in there, and therefore you'll come out with the right amount of trumot and masrot from the items. So the question is, why didn't he do that over here? So the number of answers, one of possibility is that he didn't want to take off trumot and masrot from the chulin unnecessarily. Another possibility is that he was coming to Rabbi Tarfon. He was in Rabbi Tarfon's city, who does not subscribe to that view of Rabbi Shimon Shenzuri, that blila, complete mixing, makes it that you get a statistical sample of the totality that's there. So one of these two reasons, Rabbi Shimon Shenzuri was asking Rabbi Tarfon for what to do about his situation. Amar li, his suggestion was, lekach lecha min ashuk, ve'aser alav, go buy produce from the shuk and take masrot off of it. Now, the situation of the tevel and the chulin is that the majority of whatever the mixture is chulin. Tevel is the minority. So now, in terms of the rules of bittul, the majority rules, and therefore the chulin was mevatel the tevel. Once the chulin is mevatel the tevel, according to the Torah, the tevel, quote-unquote, doesn't exist, and therefore there's no reason for him to take off trumot and masrot from there, midoraita min haTorah. But there are rabbinic institutions that tevel cannot be batel. The Gemara in Nedarim says that tevel cannot be batel because it's a davar sheyesh lo matirin, something that you can fix. And based on the Gemara in Beitzah, the Gemara there in Nedarim indicates that tevel, since you can take off the ties and fix it, that's not batel because it's a davar sheyesh lo matirin, and there's different logics as to why that's problematic. According to Rashi, it's because better to fix it and take care of it rather than to use bittul. According to the Ran and Nedarim, it's because it's too similar to the other item. Only things that are opposites can be mevatel each other. Things that are too similar to each other will not be mevatel each other. Whereas the Gemara in Avodah Zarah gives the reason as being Isuro Keheteru. The way that you would remove tevel is to take off one little thing of truma, because truma has no shiur min haTorah, and therefore if you took off any amount of the truma, therefore it would be mutar. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, so just the way that its heter happens, so too isiro happens, and that means any kol shehu of tevel will not be batel and will make a mixture problematic. So that's also a rabbinic institution. Tosafot in Avodah Zarah discusses why the Gemara needs both reasons as to why tevel is not batel, both because it's a davar sheyesh lo matirin, as well as the fact that it is isiro keheteiro. But for those reasons, tevel will not be batel in the chulin midrabanan, which means now that Rabbi Shimon Shenzuri is left with a mixture that min haTorah is batel and doesn't have to have trumot and masrot taken off of it. On the other hand, midrabanan, there's no bittul over here, and since there's no bittul over here, midrabanan, therefore he is chayav to take off trumot and masrot midrabanan. So in order to solve that problem, he needs to get other produce that's chayav midrabanan and is patur midoraita from trumot and masrot, and therefore he can then, when he brings them close together, he can be mafrish from the one that he knows for sure is chayav, which is what he's going to purchase from the shul, on the item that is mixed with his chulin over here, and discharge his obligation midrabanan to be mafrish the tithes in this instance. So now, he told him to go to the shuk and purchase produce from the Amaretz. Kasavar, he must believe, the oraita beruba batel, that the produce of the chulin and tevel of Rav Shimon Shenzuri, min haTorah was batel. And therefore, midor oraita it's patur, it's only chayab midor abanan for the reasons that we just discussed. Rov Amaretz masrin him. A majority of Amaretz take off trumot and masrot. That means min haTorah, you wouldn't have to remove tithes from demai, which is produce of an Am HaAretz, where we have a safek as to whether the trumot and masrot were taken off, the majority take off. Now, it's not a super majority, it's a just over the 50% line majority, but it's enough to say that min haTorah, you could rely on that majority, and you wouldn't have to take off trumot umasrot. V'havilei ketorim min haPatur ala patur. So since both of these instances, you're patur midoraita, but chayab midrabanan, so therefore, you're now taking off trumot and masrot from something that's patur midoraita, chayav midrabanan, on something that's patur midoraita and chayav midrabanan. Now, for this reason, I mentioned before that the tevel here has to have truma probably taken off of it, is because demai, which is produce of an Am HaAretz, the assumption is that they took off truma, since it's a minuscule amount, and they were makpid on truma, therefore they took it off, and there's no chashash they didn't take off trumot. So if he's buying produce from the Am HaAretz in the shuk, then truma is going to be taken off of it. It's not going to help him for the truma that's associated with his mixture. And therefore, there are those that explain that the case here is tevel that already had truma taken off of it, but other things like maaser rishon, trumat maaser, maaser ani, or maaser sheni were not removed from it. Why doesn't he tell him to go purchase from a non-Jew? So a non-Jew's produce would also be not subject to Trumot Masorot, at least Midoraita, but only Chayav Midorabanan. Kasava, Rabbi Tarfon, or Rabbi Shimon Shazuri must believe that a Oved Kochavim, a non-Jew's ability to purchase property in Eretz Yisrael, might give him ownership over the property, but does not remove the inherent holiness of that land, and therefore produce that comes from that land is subject to the rules and restrictions of Tevel, and requires that it be tithed, that Trumot Masorot be removed from it. Now, obviously, if the Oved Kochavim keeps it for himself and eats it himself, he's not going to take off tithes. We're not going to force him to take off tithes. The only question is, if a Jew was to buy that produce, then Chachamim instituted that he would be chayav to take off Trumot Masorot. Now, that's only true if you believe that the Oved Kochavim's ownership took away the Kedusha, and therefore the only chiyuv is the Jew's purchase of it that made him now chayav midrabanan. So that would be a solution to our problem here. We have something that's potur midoraita, chayav midrabanan. But since they subscribe to this position, that an Oved Kochavim does not take away the Kedusha, therefore it still remains midoraita, mina Torah, chayav in Trumot Masorot. And then that would be a distinction that wouldn't allow him to use something that's chayav midoraita on something that's potur midoraita, because that's against the rules of tithing, where you can't use something that's patur to discharge your obligation for tithes of something that's chayav, and vice versa. You can't take something that's chayav and remove Trumot Masorot for something that is patur. We're trying to find objects that have the same level of chiyuv, which is that they're patur midoraita and chayav midorabanan. That'd only be the case with regards to buying demai from the shuk to take care of the produce of the chulin that's mixed with the tevel, and not the buying it produce from a non-Jew, because that would be min chiyuv ala patur. That would be something that's chayav midoraita, on something that's patur midoraita. Now, Tosafot over here discusses that there are other options for him to use here. One of them is an atzitz sheinu nakuv, planting in a planter that does not have a hole in it, which is also chayav midrabanan. There's also a factor that lakuach, purchasing produce, has only a din in chumot and masrot, midrabanan, and the Rivam and the Rabbeinu Tam brothers argue about when that is, if that's only before Miruach HaKri, before you flatten out the pile, or after you flatten out the pile. But Lakuach being purchased is also only midrabanan. And Tosafot also discusses the fact that if you believe that a Goy doesn't have the power to remove the Kedusha to Aretz, he does have the power to remove it when he does the Miruach HaKri. So if you bought it from him after that point in time, then you would also be only a Chiyuv D'Rabbanan, not a Chiyuv D'Oraita. So Tosafot gives two answers. One answer, which is that produce of that type or ilk was not available. That's one possibility. Or the other possibility is that there are different levels of Chiyuv D'Rabbanan, and that some of them are too close to the Chiyuv D'Oraita, that people will confuse them, or we consider them to be a higher level of Chiyuv D'Rabbanan. And certain things that are a higher level of D'Rabbanan would not be the proper or appropriate instrument to use here in order to be mafrish of something that is patur. And so Tosafot suggests that's why the Gemara doesn't entertain all these other possibilities that could have made them something that was only chayav midrabanan. Igadamri, there was another possible scenario of the solution that Rabbi Shimon Shazuri got from Rabbi Tarfon. Told him to go purchase from a non-Jew. Kasavar, he must obviously subscribe to the position that Yesh Kinyan Oved Kochavim Be'eretz Yisrael Lefkia Miyad Maser, that there is a Kinyan Oved Kochavim that purchases property in Eretz Yisrael, takes away the Kedushat Ha'aretz, and if he takes away the Kedushat Ha'aretz, then the produce is no longer Chayav Midoraita in Trumot Masorot, and when the Jew gets that produce, he's only Chayav in it Midorabanan, and therefore he was using something that was Potur Midoraita on something that was patur midoraita, but both were chayav midrabanan, his because the tevel wasn't batel, and the goy's because that was the institution that the rabbanan required one to take off Trumot Masorot from the goy's property. But lemalei, so now the Gemara asks the question in the reverse. Kach mi'an ashuk, why did he suggest him to go purchase demai, produce of an ama aretz in the shuk? Kasavar, he must believe, ein rov ame aretz masrin. Since the majority of ame aretz are not masrim, you can't say they're patur midoraita. It really becomes a suffix doraita, and a suffix doraita the chumra, which means that you really could have a chiyuv deoraita over here, and therefore you wouldn't use that produce to take care of something that is patur midoraita, because you have an imbalance in the obligation that is associated with each one of those products. asks the question as to, even if we in different Amiarets, the Gemara in general does not let you take one Demai from one Amiarets and then separate Trumot Masrot for Demai from another Amiarets, because one of them might have separated Trumot Masrot, one of them might not have separated Trumot Masrot. So how come over here we're allowing you to do that with regards to the produce of Rav Shimon ben Shizuri? The Mishnah Melech asked that question and suggests that the difference between the two people that have Demai, or two Amiarets with Demai, is the possibility that one of them is actually Chayav Midoraita. And since that's a Safek, we are not going to allow the Safek Doraita to be discharged by a Demai from another Amiarets where it may not be Chayav Midoraita. In our case, where we know for sure that Rav Shimon Shinzuri's pile is only Usur Midorabanan, there we allowed you to use Demai to discharge the obligation, because in all likelihood it's only Midrabanan. And the worst scenario, that it's Doraita, you're Mafrish for Doraita and some of the item that is Patur as well. Although that could create a problem, because then you'd have being Mafrish from something that's Chayav Midoraita on something that's Patur, and then you have to take off extra Trumot Masrot from the part that is Patur, because that's not really Trumot and Masrot. And so the Achronim have other answers over there, which is that maybe the restriction against being mafrish from Demai and Demai is only a restriction in the chulin that's left over afterwards, but not in the truma that you're being mafrish. But there's much discussion about this as how to balance between the dinim here, where we sometimes allow you to use Demai and sometimes where we don't allow you to use Demai. Shalach Rav Yemer bar Shalmaya the Rav Papa, Hadamar Rabin bar Chinina Amar Ula Amar Rabbi Chanina Alachik Rabbi Shimon Shizuri, Loeda Kol Makom Shishana Rabbi Shimon Shizuri Alachik Kimoto. So that statement, which we said before, and we found the two Mishnayot, one by Rav Papa and one by Nachum bar Yitzchak, where we said that was applicable, and the Lachos of Rav Shimon Shizuri, where no other Amora had said that the Lachos of Rav Shimon Shizuri, does that also apply, Apin Derev Le Tevel Bechulin? Does it apply to this Breita that we just brought, the story of Rav Shimon Shizuri about the Tevel that got mixed up in Chulin? Amalei In. He said, yes, of course. Amarashi, Amarli Marzutra, Kashi Ba Rabbi Chanina Misura, that he had difficulty with this as to what the question was, because Pshita, it's pretty straightforward that the Lacha is going to be like Rabbi Shimon Shizuri over here, because Mikamar b'mishnatenu, as opposed to other instances in Shas where we say the Lacha is like a Tana b'mishnatenu in the Mishnah, then that would preclude one from saying the Lacha is like him in a Braita. But over here, it was a generic statement, a general statement that the Lacha is always like him. That means in any Tanaic work, whether it's a Mishnah or a Braita. It says anywhere he taught. So therefore, the halacha should be like him in that case. And he's perplexed by why there was even a question as to whether the halacha is like him in the Braita. And in Ochanami, the halacha is like him in the two Mishnayot that we quoted, as well as in the Braita that we just quoted now about Rabbi Shimon Shizuri. Now the Gemara is moving on to a new topic. Amar Rav Zira, Rav Ziri, Amar Rav Chananel, Amar Rav Kera, Haba B'Shnei Shitim, Yitfor. If you have a rip in the bottom margin that goes up into two lines worth of print, Yitfor, you can stitch it up and it'll be permissible. As to whether it's kosher without the stitching is machloka between the Bach and the Taz, but let's assume that you do stitch it up, it would be okay. Bishalosh, if it cuts up into three lines of writing, al Yitfor, you're not allowed to stitch it. Now, the assumption here is that it tore between letters or between words where it does not posel the letter from being ripped in half. So therefore, the problem here is something where it's not mehudar. It's not nice when it's ripped up so high that you stitch it up. It doesn't look good. Amalei Rabba Zuti, the Rav Ashi. Hachi Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah Midifti, Mishmei Derova. Hadam Rinam B'Shalosh Al Yitfor. Where we say that you can't do it with three lines up, you can't stitch it up, lo aman el ba'atikta, that's only in an older sefer, aval chadatata, if it's a newer one, late lamba, it's not problematic. Now the Gemara comments on that, velo atikta, atikta mamash, an old one doesn't really mean yashan, really old, velo chadatata, chadatata mamash, and new doesn't mean really new, ela hadlo afitzan, ad afitzan. It depends on whether it was treated with gallnut juice or not treated with gallnut juice. According to Rashi, that which is treated with gallnut juice makes it look more aged, and therefore it'll be problematic to stitch it up more than two lines up into the writing. Three lines would be too much, and you'd have to pull that yiriyah out of the Sefer Torah. On the other hand, if it was not treated with gallnut juice, it would be considered new. And since it's new, you're able to stitch it up even two lines in or three lines in. How far you can go up is not clear. From the Gemara here and Rashi later on, it sounds like three lines is the maximum, but many of the Rishonim and Achronim suggest that even more than three lines would be fine. It's just the distinction between three and two, which is important by something that's older, is not true by something that is new. Now, Rashi says the reason that if it's treated with gallnut juice, it's problematic is Havi Shachor, it darkens the cloth, Katikta, like something that's older. So therefore, it doesn't look good. It's not Mehudar when you stitch up an older one. The Rambam actually learns the halacha just the opposite over here. And he says that the ones that have Afitzan are considered to be good, and there's no limit on how much ripped up you can stitch up. Whereas the ones that do not have afitzan, were not treated with gallnut juice, are problematic if they have more than two lines ripped up from the margin all the way up into the writing. Now, why that's important is because Tosafot, all over Shas, and here again, the Rabbeinu Tam asks that the Gemara in other places says that a Sefer Torah must be treated with afitzan, treated with gallnut juice, in order for it to be a proper cloth to write on. If that's a demand, then according to the way Rashi just explained over here, then there's two cases here. There's a case where you wrote it on the lo afitzan, a case where you wrote it on afitzan. And it would imply that the better situation is where you did lo afitzan, when you didn't put the afitzan, didn't put the gallnut juice on it. So how do we reconcile that disparity? So Rabbeinu Tam suggests that the reason why you need to have gallnut juice on the treated cloth is so that it cannot be forged or it cannot be changed, the writing that's there. And so if you do something that simulates that, which the Rabbeinu Tam suggests, that when we put our hides into seed, into lime, it has the same impact as the gallnut juice, and therefore they have the properties of what the Gemara is looking for, which is something that cannot be forged, because the same process is used for Gitin, for other items, and the Gemara says that that's the same rule for a Sefer Torah. So according to the Rambam, who says that the case here is that it was treated, the only question is the treated afatz recognizable? If it's recognizable, then it's considered to be newer, and it's fine to stitch it. If it's not recognizable anymore, then it's considered to be older, and will tear too easily, and we don't let you stitch it up. But in both instances, you required that it be processed with gallnut juice, and that would then accord with the rest of the Shas, which says that you need to treat them with gallnut juice. According to Rashi, where here the treating is either it was treated or wasn't treated, that means there's a possibility that you have a Sefer Torah that wasn't treated with gallnut juice. And that's what raises the problem for the Rabbeinu Tam, which he answers that our processing has the same effect as Iputz, as treating with gallnut juice, which makes it that it cannot be forged, because erasure or any change can be seen on it. Now the Gemara qualifies this stitching that you do, v'hani mile b'gidin. That's only if you use sinews. Aval b'gardin, if you use weave, lo. That would not be appropriate or would not be fine. Question about whether this rule is halacha l'moshe mi-sinai, and therefore it's obligatory, and if you don't do it, it will posel the Sefer Torah, or whether it's simply a inyan of hadar, a din d'rabbanan, that of hidur, and therefore you would be allowed to use other items besides gidim, as long as it looked nice or was similar to the properties of the Sefer Torah itself, is subject to debate amongst the Rishonim. By Rav Yehuda bar Abba ben Daf Ludaf ben Shita Lishita Mai. If you have a tear that goes up in between the columns of the Sefer Torah, but it rises to the point where it's already three rows in, had it been on the Ktav, but it's not on the Ktav, it's in between the columns, or if it ripped horizontally in the spacing between the lines, what's the din there? Gemara leaves it as a teku, as unresolved. And then what you do with the unresolved situation here would be influenced by whether you think this is a din d'oraita or a din d'rabbanon. Because if it's a safek d'oraita, you'd paskin l'chumra. If it's a safek d'rabbanon, then you would paskin l'kula. Amrav Ziri, Amrav Hanano, Amrav, Mezuzah, Shikatva, Shtaim, Shtaim, Ksheira. If you write a mezuzah with two words on top of two words on top of two words, that is fine. Meaning that we don't require, like we did before with the Sefer Torah, the Mishpachoteichem, that you have to have three words, that's the length of Mishpachoteichem, to make a proper row of writing in the column. So here in the mezuzah, you don't have that requirement. You can even have two words. Now what that means for a Sefer Torah is to what is d'oraita in a Sefer Torah, is that mean that in a Sefer Torah, three words is enough, midoraita, midorabanan, or for hidur, they require mishpachoteichem, or whether doraita, you require three words in a Sefer Torah that are the size of mishpachoteichem, midoraita in order to be a proper Sefer Torah. But what's clear here is that a mezuzah has a different din than a Sefer Torah, and that might be because there's a separate mitzvah to write the mezuzah, and therefore it's not simply taking the parshiot from the Torah and then putting them into another form, but it has its own writing form, and therefore it has its own rules, and therefore over here, shtaim shtaim, having two words on top of two words is fine. Yibailu, shtaim v'shalosh v'achat mahu. What happens if you write on one line, the first line, two words, on the second line, three words, and on the last line, you write one word? You can see pictures of this in the Shitu Mekubetzet. The first picture is an example of what we're discussing right now. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yisrael, Kol Shekein She'asa Kishira. That's fine, because he makes it look like a shira in the Sefer Torah. Now, the Sefer Torah, when we have things like Azyashir in the Sefer Torah, it has different numbers of words on each line, and it's what's called a riach agabe levena. It has one line that has more wording, and then the line above it in the space that's left has one word in there or a couple words in there, and then it switches off back and forth between lines that have spacing in the middle versus lines that have spacing on the sides. So since it looks like a shira, it's fine. The Gemara says, Meitave, why does that make sense? Asau kishira o shira kemota psula. If you take regular print in the Sefer Torah and you make it like a shira, it's problematic. If you take a shira, like Az Yashir, that's supposed to be in that form, and you put it in the regular form of the Sefer Torah, that's also problematic, and they're both psula. So why are you suggesting that that is okay by a mezuzah? My answer is, that's fine. Kitani hahi b'Sefer Torah. That braita is about the Sefer Torah. And it might be because the Sefer Torah has contrast. It has parts that are shira, parts that are not shira, and therefore they have to maintain their integrity and be the right composition of being structured like a shira or structured like a regular column. On the other hand, the mezuzah is only one parshia, and then you can write it either way because there's no contrast between them. And since it's no contrast between them, if you write it all as a shira or all as a solid columns, both of those would be fine for a mezuzah. Itmar nami. We have a support of this contention that Amar Rav Barchan, Amar Rav Yochanan, Ramila, Amar Rav Achabar Barchana, Amar Rav Yochanan, mezuzah, she'asa shtayim v'shalosh v'achat kishira. If someone makes a mezuzah with the first line having two words, the second line three words, the last one having one word on it, like a shira, it's kasher, ubilvad. As long as you show yaseno kikuba, that you don't make it like a pyramid, uvajli yaseno kizanav, and don't make it like a tail. And you can see that both in the pictures in Rashi as well as in the Shitu Mekubetzet, that if you have the top line have one word, the second line have two words, and the third line have three words, like a pyramid that it's widening out, that's problematic. That's like a kuba. Or a zanav is the opposite. You have the first line have three words, the second line have two words, and the last line have one word, making like an upside down pyramid. That's like a tail. That's also problematic. You can only do it where you have it mixed, where you have two, three, and one. That's the only one that's considered to be okay in terms of mixing up the different lines having different numbers of words on it. Amar Rav Chisda, ala aretz v'shita achrona. The last part of the parshia of Vayayim Shemoa, which is Shema and Vayayim Shemoa, are found in a mezuzah. The last line of Vayayim Shemoa is Kimea Shamayim ala aretz. And what is being said here is that the ala aretz, those last two words of Vayayim Shemoa, have to be on a drop down, a carriage return, and have to be on the last line of the mezuzah. Now, where you place them on the last line of the mezuzah is now subject to a machloket. Igadamre, the sof shita, that you put at the end of that line, I mean, you justify it to the left margin of that column, and therefore, it'll be underneath the words, kimei shamayim, and right under those words on the next line will say, ala aretz. Igadamre, kivtchila shita, it's a carriage return, and you right justify it, so you have kimei shamayim at the end of the line, and then the beginning of the next line will be ala aretz. What's the reason for that? Mandam Rav Sof Shita, the one who says that it's underneath Kimei Shamayim ala aretz is left justified right underneath it, is Kigova Shamayim ala aretz. Like the distance between the heavens and the earth, that's how long your lifespan should be. So it's a symbolic idea that's trying to express that the Shamayim and aretz are so far apart, just like Shamayim is on top of aretz and very far apart, so too the length of your lives should be extended based on the fact that you do the mitzvot. Amanda Amar b'tchilat shita, the one who says that you do it at the beginning of the next line, right justified, k'heche merchaka shamayim v'aretz, just like the heavens are so far away from the earth, that should be the man yibu yimechem, the long life that you should be granted should be based on that, again, symbolic in nature. Okay, we're going to stop here. Four lines from the bottom of Lamed Aleph Amud Bet.